Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon and welcome to Aware. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. There is a wonderful lady next to me, and you heard her go, that. Didn't know the microphone was on. Sorry about that. Sometimes we surprise our guests here. We just like to keep it live in the studio. Alison Armstrong is who you just heard from, and she's been on the show several times talking about, she's an adult educator, talking about researching men. And after Alison is on the show, we hear from, and during the show, we hear from our male listeners saying, I am so glad you had her on. I wish our wives could hear this. So here's the deal. If you work with men, if you are a man, if you live with men, if you're single, if you're married, if you want to be in a relationship with a man, this is a show for you. We're talking about men, and we're talking about them in a way that's, of course, conscious and respectful. If you want to look any of this up while we're talking, in case you're interested, the website is understandmen.com, of who the creator is, Alison Armstrong. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Lisa. It's great to be here.
Yeah, good to have you back. So you just spent some time off for a little while, huh?
That's awesome.
Yeah, you look like you have it looks like you went to like an island for 5 weeks or something like that. You're bronzed and tanned and beautiful, and all you did was stay at home.
Well, I spent 3 weeks at home and 2 weeks in Italy, and mostly I said yes to my kids. And so I ended up at the beach 5 times, which is not normal for me. And then they're like, Mom, come in the water. Yes. So I was in the water for hours and hours and hours at a time.
How old are your kids?
Wonderful. 13, 10, and Jeff will be 18 on Monday.
Oh, wow.
Technically not a kid anymore.
No.
Yeah. Legal adult.
So my daughter tells me, Mom, I'm not a kid. She's 3 and a half.
Yeah.
So I guess it starts young. So for people who have not heard you on the show before, tell us a little bit about your background and what you do.
Oh, wow. I've never had this chance before. Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, I started studying men in 1991 after my girlfriend was called a frog farmer. And how that happened was she asked a man, why is it that men are really wonderful in the beginning? And then after a few weeks or a few months, they turn into sports watching, beer belching, pizza eating, couch slugs.
Okay.
That's what she said to him. And his response, he said, oh, I see. You're a frog farmer. And her name was Lisa, too.
Uh-huh.
And she was really upset. And finally she went, okay, what's a frog farmer? And he said, well, my dear, some women turn frogs into princes. You turn princes into frogs.
Ooh.
Yeah. And she didn't like that at all. She actually stuck her tongue out at him. When he turned away, she stuck her tongue out at him. But it shot me through the heart. And I just had visions of all these men that I thought were wonderful in the beginning. And then they changed. And I had decided that it was all an act. That all the wonderful was just a front. It was a con. That the frog was really who they were. And I had taken on a mission in life that I was going to dig that frog out as soon as I could. I got it down. I could bring the worst out in a man in about 10 days.
Wow.
And I thought I was like doing a service.
You were
to myself
them.
And womankind, you know, to reveal the con.
See,
so
there's
quickly.
Another frog. See what I, so you're kind
exactly.
of.
Exactly. I knew you were a jerk. See, uh-huh. I showed you a jerk. And when, his name was Herb, when Herb said that to Lisa about being a frog farmer, I just got it in my bones, you know, the way I'd been thinking about it was all wrong, that what I'd been doing in life was the equivalent of kicking a dog and then being surprised it bites. You know, like I really had this attitude. I should be able to treat men any way and they should still be wonderful to me. It never occurred to me that they were responding to some way I was being with them. And so I decided to find out what they were responding to. What is it that women do that brings the worst out in men? And then I was hoping if I could find out what brought out the worst, I might be able to find out what brought out the best and start having princes around me. And that was 1991, so 15 years ago. And
it started working, huh?
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, I thought it'd take 3 months to learn everything there was to know about men because everybody knew men were simple. No, we're really wrong. Men are not simple. Men are walking paradoxes. Men are very deep wells. And I'm still learning from men. 15 years later, it's accelerating. It's not slowing down at all.
Well, you had a very fresh perspective that I loved about the graduation of men, so to speak, and the stages of development of men.
Yes. That was one of the first things I learned.
And can you share that, if you could, with the listeners? Just, you've done it before on the show, but if people briefly, is that able? Are
oh,
you
yeah.
able to do that briefly? Okay, great.
Yeah, like the one-minute version or the one-and-a-half-minute. I mean, because we've got the hour-long version, so I can do any kind of...
A male caller called and said men are very simple creatures. I love that.
You know, that is one of the... that men always say that to me. They go, why have you studied men for 15 years? We're simple. I beg to differ, okay? Men are not simple. Men are direct. And to men seem simple because men are very obvious to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, this is really true, which is why they have to speak so little.
Right.
Their motivations are so obvious to each other, they don't see any point in talking about it. They already understand because they understand themselves. But on the other hand, men don't understand that to women, there is nothing mysterious about us. You and I are not a mystery to each other.
Right, to each other, right.
And we wonder why men find us so mysterious. And we actually work at being mysterious because we don't know we already are really mysterious to them. And so...
So if we work at it, we're just completely blowing them out.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. I found the more honest you are with the man, the more mysterious you seem. You do not have to work at being mysterious.
Gee, why do you think that way?
Yeah. We're already that way naturally. But men always say that men are simple and... But, I mean, just as an example, how men relate to each other is incredible. I mean, any man that – well, we have John sitting here, okay? Any man that John encounters could end up being a man that – for extreme examples, it could be a man that John ends up having to kill or a man that John would be willing to die for.
John being the silent PR person
the
in the room.
Silent PR person. I mean, it could go either direction. I mean, that is not a simple relationship, that every other man on the planet is someone that you may have to protect yourself against or you would gladly die in his behalf.
Well, now, what about the generalizations? I mean, I did hear, I don't know, it was a show the other day talking about how men talk 7,000 words a day and women talk 20,000 words a day. Have you heard this?
Yes.
From this book,
yes,
The Female Brain?
Oh, God, I love her. Bless her.
Yes.
Bless her for publishing that book and doing that research.
I know. I really want to talk to her, too. But there's, you know, there's a good point to that.
It's, how do you say it? Brizendine. Luann. If you're wondering what we're talking about, it's called The Female Brain, and it's Luann Brizendine or Brizendine.
Yeah, I don't know.
She's phenomenal.
Well, she's a therapist, and she talks about the differences between the male and the female brain. And she said that it's not indicative to having a male or a female body, that you can have male tendencies and have a female body and vice versa.
Ah.
But she said that the brain themselves, there is a distinction between a male brain and the way it connects and operates and then a female brain. The way
She's actually a medical doctor.
She is.
Yeah.
Okay.
I forget her distinction, but it's definitely biology and neurology.
Yes.
And she's done a million studies.
And that she broke this, men's, innate response is to break things down into systems, mm-hmm. and women's innate response is to break things down in terms of emotionality and connectivity and empathy. just, you know, those are innate workings of the brain.
Yeah.
And it does show how we have these abilities to, I mean, why we have such cross communication between men and women. And this can have to do with brothers, fathers, coworkers, bosses, all sorts of men, negotiations, business dealings. It's all across the board, not to mention, you know, if you're in a relationship with a man or whatnot. So, and also it has to do with, you know, same-sex relationships and gay relationships. And so it's all the same. It's just a matter how people relate to each other. And we're different. Those brains are different.
We're really different. Masculine and feminine is very different. I mean, we don't even have the same purpose for talking. So, I mean, no wonder we get into so much trouble. We don't have the same purpose.
What do you mean?
Well, the masculine purpose for talking is really to cause something to happen. It's all about everything they do is about producing result. Everything masculine is about producing a result. So, for example, in communication, if you're talking to a man, he's listening to you. What is the point?
That's
what he's listening for is what is the point. Well, in feminine communication, there is often no point. We communicate to be connected. We communicate to be known, to feel liked, to express liking and approval, to find common ground. We communicate for a very different reason. So there often is no point. We give our meta report. There's no point to the meta report. We're just telling them all about what happened that day. And that's what I call it. I call it the meta report. If a woman is upset, a man will listen instead of what's the point. He'll listen, what's the problem? So he's listening.
And how can I fix it?
Well, he's listening and that's the purpose. He thinks it's his job to fix it. He's being accountable for that as the protector and the provider. And he'll listen, what is the problem? And he'll ask analytical questions in order to figure out what the problem is so he can solve it. When as a woman, when we're upset, we purge. We just want to purge. We want to get it out of us. We're like, and when they ask analytical questions, it's like shoving it back in. You know, we're honestly, it's like we're vomiting and someone says, here, put this back in you. And so we get so mad.
We don't want to hold on to it.
No. And, you know, so we teach men. We do a course called Understanding Women, and we teach men just hold the bucket. When she's upset, you know, all you got to do is hold the bucket. And then also when they try to solve our problems, we're insulted because we think men providing for us means they think we can't provide for ourselves. So we think them trying to solve our problems is because they think that we can't. And so then we're all in off and insulted. And, you know, it goes haywire so quickly just because we don't understand each other.
Well, now, how can we improve upon that communication?
Well, my work is really based on you have to start with. Accepting that we're different, which is really hard. You and I have talked about this before. A woman looks at a man, she sees a hairy woman. A man looks at a woman, he sees an emotionally indulgent man. You know, we really have an expectation that the opposite sex is a version of our gender. Just you know, a woman's a multitasking, emotionally indulgent man. No, a woman is... We'd be better if we thought we were a different species and had a curiosity about the other species. Mm. We're so different. We're just radically, radically different. And so if you start with, instead of assuming we're the same and he's being difficult, or assuming, you know, we're the same and she's being difficult, if you assume we're different, we both have valid reasons for our behavior, and it's possible to take care of each other and fulfill each other's needs if we just back up and try to understand each other first.
It's so true. One of the most profound things you said to me, among many things, was that women look at men as they're supposed to be their best friends. And they just want to hear you gab and talk all day. And the relationship, I mean, a lot of things are like that. I was driving here and I called my husband. I'm like, honey, our daughter has a little bit of a fever. Well, how high is it? You know, once the data, once the
exactly
information. I'm like 99. He goes, it's okay. I'm like, well, are you going to be going home any time? I'm going to the radio station. You're going to be, well, no, I have this and I have this and I have this. Well, how high is the fever? I mean, he's like looking for the.
Yes.
I'm like, well, can you just go kiss her head? Because You know, whether or not he kisses her head, she's still going to have the same fever.
Yes, 99.
And it's really not a big deal. But they sent her home from school, and I figured, okay, you know, I felt like a horrible mom in leaving, and he's just driving right by the house into this next week. And it's perfectly fine. I mean, there is no judgment on it. It's just funny the way that I'm really underlyingly wanting to say something, but it's something that if I was, you know, if like I could say to my mom, "Hey, mom, would you just go and kiss my little daughter's head, please?" And she'd be like, "Yeah, I'll drive 75 minutes to do that."
Yes,
we're just so different.
And what you're referring to is that it's natural for us to think that what we're compelled to provide is what's needed. And so if we can't provide it, we try to get our partner to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's not obvious to them that that's what should be provided, we think they're wrong. You know, we think they're a terrible parent or they have their values messed up. Part of being human is thinking that how we think is the right way. And are we going to get to talk about relationship models?
Yes, I was just about to do that.
That.
And I was also going to let the listeners know that we are opening the phones to callers at the number is 818-985-5735 here. Allison Armstrong is my guest. She has created seminars about understanding men. Basically, they're called Understanding Men. No, it's Celebrating Men, Satisfying Women are the name of the workshops. And they're fascinating. I mean, just entertaining and fascinating. And there's a lot of insight that can be gained by both men and women. Now, the workshop Celebrating Men, Satisfying Women is only for women, right?
Yes. Men, we have a panel of men is the way that they participate is they can be in the panel.
Okay.
We do have two co-ed workshops.
Right. I was looking for those. And those are?
One is called Understanding Women, Unlock the Mystery. And the other is called In Sync with the Opposite Sex. And both of those workshops, the woman has to have done Celebrating Men, Satisfying Women first. But she can bring the man in her life or he can come on his own. It's all on our website at understandmen.com.
Okay, cool. All right. So, wait, you know, we did not go through the stages.
Oh, the stages.
I forgot about that. So tell us about the stages of development that you have researched in men.
Okay. Well, to give a little bit of background, one of the biggest differences I found between men and women is sense of identity. Masculine has a much, 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 much stronger sense of identity than feminine. Feminine is the adapter. So we lose ourselves very quickly. Men, you can even see it in little boys. They have this sense of themselves and who they are from the very beginning. So the stages of development are really the stages of the development of a man's sense of self and the process he goes through to have life line up with his sense of self. So we usually start with the second stage because it's easier. We call it, this is the knight stage, as in knight in shining armor. It goes from puberty, which is about 12 years old, until the late 20s or early 30s. And this stage is characterized by very strong need for adventure. So that's the priority is adventure, challenge, conquest, contest, and a lot of fun, competition, but a lot of men think competition's fun. so there's a very, very strong need for adventure and fun during that age.
Okay.
So that's called the knight. From birth to 12 years old, we call the page stage, which, you know, if you're in Camelot, right, that's the world we're talking here. You know, a page is a knight wannabe. Do you know? So he's going to – pages drive their mothers crazy because they jump off the highest step. They, you know, they lift the heaviest thing they can there. It's also all about adventures. It's just on a smaller scale. But it's risk. It's about taking risks and challenging themselves and discovering what they're capable of. And it's about being a hero. Do you know, little boys, oh my gosh, you give a little boy a chance to be his mother's hero or his teacher's hero. And they just step up. It's one of the most beautiful things to watch. So there's pages and then there's knights. And then somewhere in the late 20s or early 30s, a man goes through this very profound shift where the adventure, he still has a need for adventure because men always do. all their entire lives they have a need for adventure. But it shifts in the late 20s or early 30s where suddenly they realize that they don't have anything. Do you know, like they come around, come home one day and they look at their apartment and they're like, this is a dump. I have nothing. I am nothing. I'm not in charge of anything. And they just, it's really.
That's the 20s to 30s?
That's late 20s or early 30s. It's kind of devastating because they were having the time of their lives and all of a sudden it's not good enough. And that begins the stage we call Prince, which is about building. The whole stage is characterized by building. And it's and what men have taught me is it's really divided up into three stages. The first stage, which we call early Prince, is when you're figuring out, when a man is figuring out where is he going to build his kingdom. And again, this is where the process of the development of his sense of self is interacting with life, because some men are totally clear where they're going to build their kingdom. It's just, it's no question. It's time to build. Okay, there's the site. Let's go. Other men, they're like, well, maybe I should build it here. No, this doesn't feel right. Okay, how about over here? No, it doesn't feel right. I mean, I know a man wanted to be a cop, got his degree in criminal justice. The whole thing was all set to go, got there and went, oh, this doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. And he had a lot of years invested in it. He couldn't do it because it didn't fit his sense of self.
Wow.
And that's one of the things that women don't understand very well, because we're so adaptable that there are things men just, they cannot do it, no matter how logical it seems that they should. They just can't do it. So early Prince is about figuring out the site of the kingdom that like, hey, this is it. This fits me.
Mm-hmm.
Then they become a middle prince. Those are the ones we rarely see, unless you work with them, because they're working all the time. Building, 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 everything. They're either building or resting up to build some more. They drive their wives crazy because
if they're married at that point.
Yeah, because wives take it personal. You know, you must not want to be with me is why you work 16 hours a day. And he looks at her like she's crazy. Because it's not
like
that. I'm
doing this for you.
Exactly. It's not like that for him at all. He doesn't want to be with her. He has to do what he has to do.
And even if there's kids involved, they will still do that.
They have to build. And mm-hmm. we talk a lot more about this in my book, Keys of the Kingdom. Then once they get a lot of points up on the board, you know, a lot of accomplishments, they become what we call late prince. And that's a man who, when you listen to them talk, they'll say, I'm almost there. You know, I can just see it. There's just this other little, just one little thing I got to get done, and then I'll be there. And at that point, they ease up. They like start looking around and looking at life and what else is available, and they're not so driven anymore. And then, of course, you know this. It's great. It's a great period of time in a man's life.
At what age is that?
Well, this is a little tricky because it all depends on how long he was an early prince.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an early prince for a couple of months, then you have about a decade of being a middle prince. Sorry, ladies. It's really that long. It's 10 to 12 years of building like crazy.
Okay.
And then they become a late prince. But if it took them 6 years to figure out, they had to try all these different things until they, you know, found what they were going to be. Then you got to add that.
Mm.
So a man could become a late prince anywhere from his late 30s. A couple I've met were middle 30s, but they were very serious young men. So late 30s to even late 40s, a man could become, you know, be at this late prince stage in his late 40s, even early 50s. It all depends on how long it took for him to figure out where he wanted to build his kingdom.
And then that moves them into, there's a tunnel at some point. There's a cave.
Tunnel, yes. We call it a friend of mine called it a tunnel. And he called the tunnel because he called it the descent into darkness. And he called the descent into darkness, he says, because every step you take, you're less sure of anything. And it's kind of a trick on guys. It's not really fair because in all this building stage, they're reconciling their sense of self with their friends and their parents and their children and their wives or their girlfriends or everything that the culture is telling them they should be there. They're like working it out. And then when it just looks like they're going to win the game, they're plunged into this existential inquiry of, does any of this matter anyhow? I mean, just plagued by doubt and questions and who am I really and what matters really. And they we call it a midlife crisis.
Around
in our culture.
What age, I was going to say?
Well, it can happen anywhere. It happens about 10 years after they really started building. 10 to 12 years after that, they'll go into the tunnel.
And how long does it last for?
Between 6 months is the shortest I've ever seen a man come out of the tunnel. 2 to 3 years seems more normal. And some men don't come out. Mm. Because especially if a man is undermined a lot while he's in the tunnel – if he's never given the space to sort it out, it can make it more difficult because he really – we call it a one-man tunnel. He distances himself from everyone in his life and he's got to figure it out for himself. And if he has like a wife who keeps reminding him, well, honey, don't you remember this was important? We always said this was important and we built this for so long and you worked so hard for this. Of course this is important. That's just too much noise.
Doesn't make sense to him.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It actually creates more distance because now he can't share his doubts with her because he gets all this stuff back that he really doesn't need. And so, I mean, there's things I've seen. There's something called the New Warrior Training Camp that the Mankind Project does that seems to be great for men in the tunnel to sort out who they are. There's some stuff Landmark Education does that seems to be great for men in the tunnel, but they need space. They need room to doubt and to question and then to go. I just got a letter from a friend of mine yesterday who's been in the tunnel and he wrote me and it said, I'm done with that.
Great.
I'm done with that. This is who I am, and this is what my life's about.
Great.
And oh, I just love it. It's such a beautiful thing. And and if you're with the man while he's in the tunnel, you gotta have faith. You know, if you're married to him and you've signed up for the long haul, you gotta have faith. If you're dating a man in the tunnel, they can't commit to anything because men commit with themselves, and in the tunnel, their selves are in doubt, so they can't commit. They just flat can't commit. Don't even try. You'll just be miserable.
And then there's an end to this.
There's an end to this. When a man comes out of the tunnel, he's what we call a king. And kings are men. You can't – the mistake is to think of kings in terms of materialism. You can't. A king is a man who knows who he is because he decided who he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so this
and
is
you can tell – yeah, you can tell a king – by they have this – there's a physical – every stage has a physical stature to it. Like the night stage, they're the guys that are like all pumped up. And they're like, I'm bitching because I'm bitching, you know? Mm-hmm. They got a lot of testosterone in their blend. Princes like sort of fade away. There's a kind of – are you even here? You know, because I'm building, I'm working. And there's a sense that there's a pliability, there's a kind of mushiness to their bodies and to their sense of self. And then kings are just, they're planted, you know, that wherever they are, they're like,
solid.
I own this space, you know, and that's what they feel, solid. Like you, kings are the ones that women are intimidated by, that women are like, oh dear, I can't manipulate this man. All the things that worked before aren't going to work with them. And I remember the first king I ever met, I said to my mother, uh-oh, Mom, he's a man. This is a man. This is, oh, what do you do with a man? And they need something very different. You know, princes need a lot of support and belief in them. Kings just need admiration and appreciation. They need you to receive their gifts because they have all these gifts to give and they need you to receive them. If you won't receive them, they'll find somebody who will.
Now, what if you're in a marriage with someone who goes from the prince to the king? Is that right? Prince to the king's phase.
Yeah.
I mean, the prince through the tunnel to the king. And how do you stay with that person the whole time when they're changing so frequently and so massively?
Well, fortunately, that's what women are good at. We're good at adapting.
Adapting, yes.
That is our strong suit. We're incredible adapters. It's the source of our success, you know, in business and everywhere else today. And the trick is knowing there's nothing wrong. you know, like men in the tunnel often think they're crazy. If you think they're crazy too, all is lost. Do you know? But if you know, he's just in the tunnel. This is a sacred journey. This is a sacred space. Mm-hmm. And Keys of the Kingdom, which you know, came out 3 years ago, is all about a woman whose husband is in the tunnel, and learning to understand where he's been, and what she did, and what would have worked better. Mm-hmm. You know, and then preparing herself for the king that he's becoming, because her self-sufficiency and her masculinity and I can do everything myself is going to just crash into who a king is and be a disaster. And it's where a lot of marriages actually end. And so the book is really about her preparing to shift herself into the queen, to be ready for the king.
So do women go through these similar phases?
Well, what they've told us is to the degree that a woman is career-oriented, she will go through these same stages of development, because career is a masculine paradigm, and we're the adapters, so women become very masculine, and then they become subject to these sort of masculine phenomenon. So career women can identify with the prince and the prince and the king stage. In terms of being feminine, which all women have an infinite capacity for femininity as well, there are no stages. Your daughter can express the queen just as well as any 50 or 60-year-old. It's already there.
Oh.
Do you know?
Huh.
Aspects of femininity, which we call the temptress, the mother, and the queen, they're already there from the very beginning. It's just what is nurtured, what is called for, what's expressed.
And it's interchangeable at any given time. Now, this might sound stereotypical to some people. We're getting some calls in saying this, you know, it's a shame that men haven't progressed any further than this. So,
oh, like we've evolved from the cave woman. Sure. Oh, that is such a – okay. I have a little bit of a problem with that accusation.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if we think men are still so primitive, have your man look at another woman and then have an evolved reaction to that. And then you can tell me how far women have progressed. I mean, we're both cave women and cavemen. Our DNA hasn't changed in 40,000 years.
Still.
The slight change in the last 40,000 years. We've got the same blueprint. And this is one of the things you can tell is obviously one of my hot buttons. We have unrealistic expectations. We think that we should be free of our instincts. And so we are not responsible for our instincts, men or women. We're not responsible for our own, and we're not responsible for the opposite sex's instincts. And so we push each other's buttons and bring out the cave woman and the cave man in each other all the time, because we don't take the time to find out what those instincts are.
Well, I think, though, that the communication styles have become different. Even though we are the same innate human beings, I think that we are looking at communication a little bit differently these days, or it can be looked at a little bit differently, which is what you pretty much talk about, smoothing the communication between the sexes by understanding the differences between the sexes. You're basically connecting everybody.
Yeah, like if you know a man's way of listening is what's the point, and you say, honey, I want to share something with you because I want you to know me better and by seeing what my day was like, and there's no point. Just relax and let me talk. Oh, they're so relieved. Actually, like, oh, okay, there's no point. I mean, the men in our courses are so cute. Okay, no point. There's no point. There's no point. Just remember, no point. Just listen. No point. Just listen. There's no point. There's no point. Because their automatic way of listening is, what's the point? What's the problem? And it's not because they're unevolved. I mean, evolution – I mean, you use the word conscious. When you're opening the show, you use the word conscious. And that is what my work is about. It's about becoming conscious about what's real versus what our expectations are. And what's real is we still have the same instincts as our ancestors.
Those are our subconscious instincts.
And they're triggered. They're triggered. They run by hormones. They're automatic. And they shape the way we speak, the way we think. They shape that women ask each other to go to the bathroom with you. You know, I'm going to go to the bathroom. You want to go with me? Mm-hmm. That is total instinct that has us do that. And
what instinct is that, by the way?
Well, frankly, if you're a squatter, you need someone to watch your back.
Yeah, I see. Okay. So it goes back to the caveman.
It's safety and women. For women, safety comes in numbers. Mm-hmm. And we behave that way all the time.
Well, they don't want to miss out on any conversation, so they take their conversation with them. All right, we are going to take a quick break. My guest is Alison Armstrong. We're talking about understanding men and celebrating men and satisfying women in the process. The phone number here is 818-985-KPFK. We're going to be taking your calls when we come back from break. This is Lee Sigar. You're listening to Aware on KPFK. Welcome back to Aware. Hi, this is Lee Sigar. Alison Armstrong is my guest, and we're talking about the differences between men and women. She is a facilitator of workshops, and she has been for how long have you been doing this, Alison?
Studying men since 1991, and we started celebrating men satisfying women in 1995.
So 11 quite
years.
Some time.
Long time.
And so basically in the lectures and what you've done is you have gotten feedback from people over the years, especially from men, and surveyed and spoken to and you know, found out the information that you're talking about. That's the way that Alison has found this out. Also, something else that she's talked about is relationship models. Tell me what that is. What is a relationship model?
Well, this is actually something that I've discovered lately mm-hmm. that I'm really excited about. And it goes back to what we were talking about being conscious. Because really what's possible between men and women depends utterly on us being conscious because our instincts are not going to get us anywhere. And so let me see if I can lay this out. What I discovered is that each of us has a very strong idea about relating in a relationship. What is the point of a long-term relationship? But to us, it's not a model that we have. We just think it's the right way of relating. And so we unconsciously try to mold our relationships into that right way of relating. And we honestly can't understand why other people do it differently. So let me give you an example. So far, I've distinguished several different relationship models. The most traditional one, the age-old relationship model, I call the legacy model. So that's the one that's all about having children and having your children have more than you had and set up to have their children have more than they have. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, what are you leaving? What are you building? And there's a lot of focus on this legacy. And people, you know, arranged marriages, you know, mm-hmm. we're all about legacies. Another model that is arisen, I call the companionship model. It's the let's do life together. I know. Let's do life together.
Okay.
And variations of the companionship model are the adventure model. So that's what we want to do together. We want to have adventures. I'm looking for the person who's going to go scuba diving with me and is going to go traveling with me and is going to, you know, so that's the adventure model. Another variation of the companionship model I call the hobby model. So this is when you have a companionship model, the driving like criteria in seeking a relationship is that you have a lot in common, mm-hmm. that you make sure that you have interests and passions in common. When you have a companionship model, that's what you're really looking for, is we like to do the same things and we like to do them together. Another model, which is actually what had me discover this whole thing, is because it's the opposite of my model. Another model I call the karma model. And that's the growth and development model. That's that, you know, I want to find someone who challenges me. I want to be in a relationship with someone who really, you know, who pushes my buttons and makes me learn about myself and makes me grow. And I make them grow. And we heal our inner child together. And we and we discover new, you know, it's a fascinating way to do it. It's a pointed inwards kind of model.
Okay.
You know, our being related is about our being related, mm-hmm. you know, and about the growth that we can get from that. Another model, which is the one that I have, and so I used to think it was right until I discovered there's all these other valid possibilities, is the support model. you know, where the purpose of being related is to support the other person in having what they need so that they can accomplish out in the world what it is that they want to accomplish. And so it's where the karma model is pointed in, where the support model is pointed outward.
Mm-hmm.
And but these are some funny things that happen, okay? So like, for example, if your model is companionship and you have friends that have a legacy model, but they don't do a lot of things together,
yeah,
you know, you're just always worried about them because they don't seem to be very good companions. How's this relationship going to last,
uh-huh,
you know? If your model's legacy, it's hard to understand why people get married who aren't planning on having children. I mean, why did they even get married?
Right.
Because it seems like the point, you
uh-huh,
know?
Uh-huh. So your model is different from other people's models, but yet we impose our model upon other people.
Yes, it's unexamined, it's unexpressed, and we try to mold the other person into it. And worse, when we're in relationship, we take it personally. So if I have, let's say you have a companion model wife, or it could be a husband, so change the genders however you want. So you have one companion model person married to a support model person, do you know, or a legacy model,
right,
person, you know. So the companion model, the point of this is whatever your model is, when push comes to shove, that's the priority to you. So, like, mm-hmm, I have friends who they're very good companions, but if you examine how they operate in their marriage, it's actually a support model. Because when push comes to shove, they give up being with each other to support the other one in doing what they need to do.
Oh.
He supports her in traveling for her job. She supports him in spending time with his children. And even though they love being together, the priority is that support.
Will that work?
Oh, their marriage works really great, mm-hmm, because they both have the same desire.
So is it
so
something...
if you have like what happens is if you have someone with a companion model married to someone with the support model, and she's like, you know, or he's like, I want to be with you, I want to do something together, and the other's like, why can't you just support me in what my job requires? You know, I thought you loved me. And I was like, I thought you loved me. And it's just that they had a different intent for being related that wasn't examined. It wasn't talked about. It wasn't worked out ahead of time.
Is this something that people should determine before they get into a relationship?
Oh, absolutely.
If they're lucky enough,
they'll figure it out. Or, I mean, I ended up just being really lucky because of how smart my husband is. Because I am a woman. I'm a woman with a mission. My life is dedicated to healing relationships between men and women. And when he met me, you know, without ever discussing it with me, he saw what my life was for and how I was going to live it. And he decided he wanted to get on board. You know, the way he puts it is, my job is to keep the wheels on. So it's a support model where he voluntarily signed up to support me. One of the problems you can have in a support model is both people have a support model, but they think they're the one that should be supported.
Right. Now, this is your second marriage, right?
Yes.
Now, the first marriage, what didn't work about that? Was it you have two different models?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, boy, a lot of things didn't work about that. One was...
You've talked about it before on the
I've
air, which is why I opened,
you know,
that can.
Yeah, one was I definitely had more of a companionship and support model. My first husband, I would say, had a legacy model. And, you know, his parents spent no time together, so he didn't expect to spend any time with his wife. He's very much a loner. He was shocked,
by the way,
I expected time with him.
I wanted to ask you about, you know, does the Freudian model matter here at all? Does the relationship to the mother matter?
I have never studied Freud. Mm. I'm not an expert on that, so I couldn't say. But I think we...
Have you, in your experience of studying men, have you found that there is a link between the way that men treat their mother and how they treat their female relationships?
I'd actually say it's the opposite. There's a huge link between the way their mother treats them and how they treat female relationships.
Fascinating. Very cool. All right, let's go to the phones.
Sure.
Let's light this up even more. Jeff from Newport Beach, do you have a question for Alison Armstrong?
Yeah, the question was, I mean, do you ever see a regression in the opposite direction where the king becomes a prince or the prince becomes a page? Because I've had friends growing up that, you know, they were basically a silver spoon and they inherited a lot of money and therefore they didn't go through a regular working paradigm and they just had an allowance or a trust fund. And so they seem to be a prince forever. You'd notice that?
Well, a prince, you have to remember a prince is in the building stage. So they probably didn't even get to be a prince. Warren Buffett said, I've given my children enough money that they can do anything, but not enough money that they can do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a child is given enough money, and it's not even just about money. It's what was the parents' orientation to them, their support of them. Or certain, you know, if someone really wants to build a music career and there's no support for that, then a man can end up treading water. He'll usually end up going into the tunnel at some point and going, to heck with my family, I'm going to be a musician. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of points in the process where a man has to stand up for himself, given the pressures. But to answer your original question, what may look like regression, which is pretty more common than I wish in our culture, is when you have a king who's established his kingdom and then he loses it in a divorce. So he's built this thing. Now he's divorced. Half of everything he's built is gone. And he'll feel the need to rebuild. But there's a problem. Building as a king, you do not have the intense drive that a prince has. A king knows there's more to life than work. So when he has to buckle down and just work, he hates it. He resents it. You know, so that's a tough place, is when you have to support a king in rebuilding his kingdom. And
I appreciate your phone call. I think that it's always great to hear, especially from men during this call, because it can sound like we're stereotyping here, but you can relate to this, which is great. All right, thank you very much for your phone call, Jeff. Going back to the phones, Robin in Pasadena. Robin, do you have a question for Alison Armstrong?
Yes, I do. I first want to say, Alison, thank you so much for coming on the show. Just listening to you has been so eye-opening. I feel like I was in the dark ages myself, not knowing about men and women and relationships, and I thought I did know everything I needed to know, and I'm just getting so schooled here, so I'm so glad you're on today.
Great.
Thanks.
I want to ask you, I recently broke up with my boyfriend, a long-term relationship, and thanks to you, I see what stage he was in. He was in the tunnel stage, 40 years old.
Mm.
I mean, it sent chills up my spine hearing you describe that phase, because that's exactly what he was going through. I didn't even know that was a phase. I just thought it was a problem with him.
Yes.
Broke up with him. Anyway, I'm recently single again, and I was wondering, I'm in my early 30s. Do I now need to just look for kings and not even waste any time with any prince or tunnel guys? Or do I wait for my boyfriend to come out of that tunnel and hope he comes back and realizes what, you know, where he went wrong?
Well, I don't know if he's going to realize where he went wrong, since I think you left him in the tunnel. But to answer your question, and I really appreciate your honesty about it, there's a couple things you need to think about. One is, as soon as women find out that, you know, there's this thing called a king and he's very clear about who he is and what he wants to do is provide, women are like, oh yeah, I want that. I want that. I just want a king. Well, there's a downside to that. You know, first of all, if you have a support model as your idea of a relationship and what you want to do is support a man, which can be incredibly satisfying, a prince is the one that's going to be the likely candidate for being supported. Kings don't need support. Kings need someone who is able to receive. Now, receiving is the hugest challenge facing women today, because we've been so masculinized and receiving is the ultimate in femininity, and we don't know how to receive graciously, how to receive and be powerful. We work on this in all our courses because it's our biggest challenge. So if you're like, okay, I want a king, there's some things you got to deal with. You got to learn how to receive. And you have to understand men and their opinions. You know, they have this thing. They're called opinions. And women don't treat men's opinions, they don't treat them effectively because we don't understand them. For a woman, her opinion is what she thinks about something. And so if a man thinks something about something, we don't like it, we diss it. Well, that's not what an opinion is to a man. To a man, an opinion is a combination of the information he's gathered and himself, his values, his standards, his expectations in life, what he has concluded about life. So in every man's opinion, himself is in it, which is why they defend their opinions to the death. They're defending themselves. Now, a king is a man. He's lived 40 or 50 years, so he's gathered a lot of information. He has a crystal clear sense of himself. So guess what he's going to have an abundance of? Opinions. You know, so, I mean, the reason why I'm painting this is every stage has its gifts and every stage has its challenges. You know, knights are the most fun in the world. They're a delight. They're so much fun with their adventures and their stamina and all that stuff. They're just wonderful. They have trouble committing because they're not ready to build yet, and commitment is part of building. And so there's a downside to it, you know. Princes will let you support them. They'll let you influence them. They'll let you be a partner. They'll let you be part of it. You know, it's delightful, but they're very limited in what they're able to provide. You know, they can't spend a lot of time. They usually don't have a lot of money. They're not going to be, you know, they're not going to be the Richard Gere in Pretty Woman, you know.
So what are you saying, that Robin should wait for her king or no?
No, I'm saying two things. One is you got to figure out what matters the most to you. Because you can't have everything. You can't have it always. My husband's a king, so I got a lot of opinions to deal with, you know? And that's part of who he is, and I signed up for it. If you're in a lifelong relationship and you marry a prince, you get to go on the whole adventure. You get to have all the princes and the tunnel and the king, and you might end up being an elder, which is, you know, the wise men. That's actually where my husband's headed. And it's just, there's what it comes down to, Robin, is we want to kind of pick a mate out of a Sears catalog.
Yeah.
but it doesn't work that way. What you've got is a man. You're going to wake up with a human being. You're someone with a soul, someone with passion, someone who can be hurt. And what matters, whether you wait for your boyfriend or find a new one, is do you want to be with him? You know, so what, he's in the tunnel. He's in the tunnel, and you love being with him. So you're willing to go through it. Or you got to separate the man from the circumstance and choose the man. And can he give you what you need? And how long are you willing to go without some of it?
And some of it's going to shift, and some of it might change. Well, chew on that, Robin.
There's no way to reduce the risk.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks, Robin.
Bye.
I'm sure you've spoken to a lot of people with that answer, because as you were describing these phases, they do change because there's an evolvement of the phase, and then there can be a regression, but it can also continually evolve. I think having men be aware, and that's one of the reasons why we have heard from so many men before when you're on the show, is if my husband, or people say, if my husband could just come to your workshop and realize that he's in the tunnel, maybe he'll get out of it faster. And
that's actually true. Mm-hmm. Both if she understands and he understands. We have a tape called The Amazing Development of Men, which it's a CD actually that goes over all this.
Yes.
Men love it.
Yes,
I mean,
it's
they're
great.
Just like, oh my God, I've never felt so understood. I'm not going crazy. I know what to do now. But I think what Robin was really pointing to is, we're always trying to find a way to make relationships be less risky.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've seen is everything amazing that happens between men and women comes from us being vulnerable.
Yeah, and emotional and connected.
Yeah.
Allison is going to be speaking in Los Angeles October 7th and 8th at the LAX Hilton. So that's, she's doing a Celebrating Men, Satisfying Women workshop there. That's a 2-day workshop. And there's also another one that, now Allison, you're going to be leading that one?
I actually don't lead that workshop. I lead the graduate programs, but I do also lead introductory programs. So next Tuesday, we have one happening in Orange County. And the following Tuesday, we have one happening in LA. October, we're going to be in Pasadena. If they go to our site and look for Making Sense of Men, that's our free introductory seminar, incredibly valuable information about how men behave when they really care about you versus when they are really attracted to you and like to take your clothes off.
Right.
What are the words that men use when they really care, which women totally miss because they are expecting a different set of words. So Making Sense of Men, if they go to the website and look for workshops.
The website is?
Understandmen.com.
Okay, understandmen.com.
Yep.
And then look for the Making Sense of Men workshops. And there's September 19th, September 26th, and October 3rd. They're all over the place.
Yep.
And you do lead those.
I do most of them.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I know that there's a lot of information that you shared here. And if we didn't get to certain calls, I'm sorry about that. But I know that, you know, going to these, getting some of these CDs makes a lot of sense. I have the Understanding Men CD, and I had my husband listen to it, and it was really good.
Yeah.
It's really good. He loved that information.
They do.
Yeah. And there's also a book that Allison wrote called Keys to the Kingdom, and it's kind of a story about these stages.
Yeah, it's fiction. It's
yes.
fun.
Okay, well, that's it for us today, and thank you very much for sharing with us again.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
It's always inspiring and always fun. All right, and I want to thank Gina Salvati and Tanya Jenkins and Irene, the person who helps us with our emails. Guy, the engineer in the studio there. Greg Miller, thank you for helping us all these years. And that is, oh, gee, sorry. And while I'm committed to bringing you the clearest information possible, in the end, I always, always ask you to listen to your own truth. Until next time, I invite you to stay aware.